1 Corinthians chapter 2. We do, however, speak a message of wisdom among the mature, but not the wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. No, we declare God's wisdom, a mystery that has been hidden and that God destined for our glory before time began. None of the rulers of this age understood it, for if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. However, as it is written, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no human mind has conceived, these things God has prepared for those who love him. For God has revealed them to us by his Spirit. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. For who knows a person's thoughts except the person's own spirit within him? In the same way, no one knows the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. We have not received the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we may understand what God has freely given us. This is what we speak, not in words taught us by human wisdom, but in words taught by the Spirit, explaining spiritual realities with Spirit-taught words. The person without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God, but considers them foolishness. He cannot understand them, because they are discerned only through the Spirit. The person with the Spirit makes judgments about all things. But such a person is not subject to merely human judgments. For, quote, who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct us, him? But we have the mind of Christ. May God bless his word to us.
Wow, great to see you. My name is Michael, if you don't know me, and my wife and I, Beth Ann, moved here 16 years ago, October of 2000. Isn't that cool? I love that. We've been here a long time. All three of our kids were born here, as a lot of you know, and they don't sound like us, which is awesome. We love it. They sound like you. Daddy, I want a banana. I use that all the time. Works every time. So when I was in the States, when I went to university a long time ago, I joined a fraternity. And they don't really have those here, I don't think. But a fraternity or a sorority is this Greek society at university that's kind of like a social club you would join. Kind of pay to have some friends. You pay some money and you get some friends. But it was a secret society, which meant that you had to be invited to be a part of it, and then you would become a pledge, which if you've seen any of the movies about fraternities, they haze you. You know, they make you march and memorize things. And ours didn't haze us, though. They were very nice to us. But I did learn the Greek alphabet. I think I still remember it 30-plus years later. You want to hear the Greek alphabet? Yeah. So here we go. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, capital, lemma, mu, nu, xi, omicron, pi, rho, sigma, tau, upsilon, phi, chi, si, omega. Boom! Yes! 30 years later. Still got it. I remember that. That's the only thing I remember that I memorized. But they make you do all these things, and I can even remember then, after a few months, they take you out and they do an initiation. And you stay up all one weekend. You don't sleep at all the whole weekend. And by the way, if you're sending your kids away, young people away to university and they tell you how busy they are, please don't believe them. They are lying to you. They're having fun. And we were staying up all weekend getting initiated. And I still remember this because I was blindfolded out in the middle of some woods somewhere. And they were standing me. You know, they stand us all in a little line. And all of a sudden I start itching. I'm like, what is going on? Why am I itching? And then all of a sudden it started to hurt. And then I realized they had stood me on top of a giant pile of ants that were covering my ankles, biting away. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to talk. So I'm like, somebody. You know, finally I'm like, ouch. And they came over and fixed it. It was okay. I lived. But then I got initiated. And then my first role in the fraternity was the sergeant at arms. Love that title. And this is what it meant. We had a secret chapter room that only people in the fraternity could go in. And the sergeant at arms would man the door. And for you to be able to get into the room, you had to say the secret password. So I would say some secret Greek words, and then they had to say some secret... I mean, it's so silly, right? It's just ridiculous. But it was fun at the time, right? And I would say it, and if they couldn't say the proper words back to me, they could not enter the room. You know, that's what the sergeant did. You know, and they picked the biggest guy in the fraternity to do that too, right? Yeah, let's put Michael over there. Everyone else is 6'2". Come on. But I looked mean, so they didn't come in. So that was my job, was the secret passage, the secret words. And if you didn't have the secret words, you couldn't come in. I think that's so interesting. And today, this passage talks about something secret. God's secret that's been hidden since before the beginning of time, as Ray read. It's a secret that the world didn't know for years and years and years, and it's finally being revealed. Paul is talking about this not only to the church in Corinth, but he's actually talking about it to all of the churches. So if you haven't been here, here's what we've been doing for the past few weeks and for the next few weeks. We're going through this letter that Paul, the apostle, wrote to this church in this city called Corinth. And if you don't know where that is, Corinth is in present-day Greece. It's not there anymore. There's remains there. But it was only 48 miles from Athens. So that may help you figure out where it is. And it was a major metropolitan center. Matter of fact, Paul, when he went out as a missionary, his strategic places that he would go to would be the biggest places there were. If Paul were around today, Paul would be setting up churches in New York, in Hong Kong, in London. He would go to the major metropolitan centers. And then what he would do is he would go into that city and he would look for people who were interested in hearing about God. So he would go, if there was a temple or a tabernacle, a place of worship, he would go there first. Because he knew those people were interested in hearing more about God. That's what Paul's strategy always was. And so he was always going to the strategic places. But if you read through his letters, he was also going only where God, through his Spirit, led him. So it was a mixture of strategy and being Spirit-led together that Paul would go to these places. So he goes and he starts a church in Corinth. And this is in the early, this is like in 50 AD. So Jesus has been there and he's gone. And a few years later, Paul has gone to Corinth. And now he stays there for a year and a half. And now he's in a place called Ephesus, which is in present-day Turkey. And he is writing them a letter. He's already written them one letter and he's writing another letter because the church that started there, maybe 150 people or so, they're having all kinds of issues. And I want you to imagine this. As I was studying this, I really thought about this maybe for the first time ever. No gospel has been written yet. So all the teachings of Jesus that we have in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they don't have any of those. Matter of fact, they don't have any sort of anything from the New Testament that we have today. The people in Corinth have none of that. They have, for those who were Jewish, they would have the Hebrew scriptures, but only a few of them are Jewish. Most of the people in this church are Greek. So they're brand new to all of this. And all they have really is what Paul has told them, what Paul has taught them. And maybe they've written some of that down, but Paul spends 18 months there. He and his team come to Corinth. They spend 18 months setting up this church, and now they've left it to move on to plant churches elsewhere. And now they're having all kinds of issues. I mean, they've got people who were former slaves in this church, and they've got really wealthy people in this church. And so there's all kinds of divisions, like, well, you're just a slave, and, you know, and I'm really wealthy. And then they have divisions of who should they follow. There's two or three different leaders, and some of them say, well, I'm following this guy. Well, I'm following this guy. And then there's all kinds of other issues that we're going to go through over the next few weeks as we go through this book called 1 Corinthians. But the reality is Paul is writing to them because they're having crazy issues, and he's trying to help them understand what the main thing is to focus on, right? So to catch their attention, he begins to talk about wisdom. Now, why does he do that? Well, he does that because the Greek people, their highest value isn't money, isn't possessions. Their highest value, what they think is more important in the whole world, is wisdom, right? That's their top value. We want to have wisdom. We want to be really smart. We want to know everything there is to know about everything. And Paul knows that. He knows that that's their top value. So he leans in and he begins to talk about wisdom. We're going to read through a little bit of the passage in just a moment. But he also entices them by saying there's a secret wisdom. There's a hidden wisdom that's been around since before times began that God is now revealing. Can you imagine if you're the church, they're going, your top value is wisdom, and he's going, there's a secret wisdom nobody knows about, but God is finally revealing. It would be like, for me, somebody says, there's a new trailer for the Star Wars movie out, and I'm going, come on! Is that out today? Can I go watch it right now? That's how they're feeling. It's like the new trailers come out. Paul has just enticed me. He said, there's a secret or a hidden wisdom. Tell me what it is. I want to know. So, let's read this first part, 1 Corinthians, Ray just read to us. It says this, yet among the mature we do impart wisdom, although it's not a wisdom of this age or the rulers of this age who are doomed to pass away, but we impart a secret and a hidden wisdom of God, which God decreed before the ages for our glory. None of the rulers of this age understand this. For if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, no heart of man has even imagined, what God has prepared for those who love Him. Does that not get you like, come on, tell me what that is? That's amazing. What is this wisdom that you're talking about? Well, here it is. We now know, because we're looking back on this, these guys, again, were clueless. They're just waiting around for information. But we know what the wisdom is. God from the beginning of time. And for us, as I go through this, it may seem simple. It might even seem, you know, like, oh, well, I've known that forever. But I want us to think about it as we're doing this, as if you're hearing this for the very first time. Okay? So the beginning of the wisdom, I think the first part of it, the first best picture of it is John chapter 1, where he talks about the Word became flesh. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And we know the Word being Jesus. They didn't know that. They just knew that the Logos, back then for the Greeks, was all of wisdom combined. It was all the knowledge of the universe wrapped up into one. And Paul says yes, or John says yes. And that wisdom, that knowledge, that logos was with God, and that logos was God. And he's talking about Jesus. And then he says this, and in verse 14 he says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Another translation says that he moved into the neighborhood. Isn't that good? I love that. He moved into the neighborhood. Now, for the Greeks, that's blowing their minds, right? All of wisdom, all of knowledge in the whole universe gets squeezed into a person. A baby, actually. A helpless little baby. The creator of the entire universe is in a baby that grows up and is hanging out with us. He has come to earth to be with us. Why? Because we now, back then, they had such misconceptions of who God was. They had gone off the wrong track. They thought God was mad at them. They thought they could never be good enough. They didn't understand how much God loved them anymore. They were all confused about who God is. Still true today, for a lot of people, by the way, right? So God said, they're helpless. They can't do anything about it, so I'm going to come to them. You guys ever heard the story about the man? He's in his cabin. You know, it's freezing cold outside, and there's snow going off everywhere. And he's sitting there, he's reading a book by his crackling fire, and all of a sudden he hears a thump. And he looks back, and there's a bird, and it's trying to get inside his cabin. But it can't see that the window is in front, and he keeps whacking into the glass, thinking, I'm going to get in there, because this looks nice and warm in there, and it's crazy out here. You guys heard this story before? So he's sitting there, and he's thinking, well, what do I do? This bird is going to kill itself. And I've got a barn right over here outside my house. If I can just get the bird to go in the barn. So he wraps himself up in all of his clothes and he goes outside and he goes over to the barn and he opens up the doors. And he's like, come over here, go in here, bird. And all the bird sees is, and he's going, you're an idiot, what are you doing? And the bird doesn't get it. And finally the man just says, if I could just become a bird, I could tell him what to do and I could save his life. That's what Jesus is. God came to us so that we could see God. Matter of fact, Colossians chapter 1 says it like this. Jesus is the visible image of the invisible God. For those who wanted to see God, all they had to do was look at Jesus. There he is, standing in front of you, talking to you directly. Everything Jesus said, he said this, and everything he did came directly from his Father. To represent his Father, to point people to his Father. That's why he came. But he didn't just come to do that. The second part of this is, and Dave talked about it last week, he didn't just come to be among us, he came to give his life. See, the plan all along, before the beginning of time, doesn't this blow your mind? Before you and I were ever made, before the earth was ever made, the plan was that God was going to be the one to pay the price. He already knew there was going to be a price that needed to be paid because of sin, our sin. And he already knew that he was going to be the one to pay it. That's part of the secret, the hidden wisdom that has been going on since before time began. That was his plan from the beginning. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? He knew he was going to come. You see, there was a price that needed to be paid. And he knew that we couldn't pay it. And he knew that we were all in deep trouble. That we were lost. Lost. And we were not going to make it. So he came and he gave his life for us. Always the plan. Paid a price that we couldn't pay so that we could have a restored, renewed relationship with the God who created the universe. Mind-blowing. But the best part, I love this, is that he says, everybody's invited. Everybody's invited. You see, the world is still trying to earn its way to God, right? There are billions of people on the planet Earth that still think they've got to earn their way to get to heaven. Or there's billions of people on the Earth that think, I'm just going to be good enough and that'll be good enough for God. I'm a good person. I'm a nice person. So that's got to be good enough. And here's what you need to hear today, and the whole world needs to hear, that neither of those things are correct. You don't have to earn it. You can't earn it. And nobody's good enough. You can't earn it. You don't have to earn it. And nobody is good enough. But Jesus didn't come to make good people better or to make bad people good. I love this. He came to make dead people alive. That's why he came. In sin, we're dead. But through Jesus, we're alive. And I love it that he says everybody's invited. He talks about this party. He says, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no heart has even imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. I love that picture. Anyone been invited to a wedding before? Anyone? Probably everybody, right? So when we moved here a few years ago, we got invited to some weddings. And in America, if you're invited to a wedding, you're invited to the whole shebang. That's it. You're there. But here, we do it a little different, right? You got part A, part B, and part C. Sometimes there's a D in there. You know? And when we first got here, we were invited to all parts. Everybody's like, yeah, you're coming to the whole thing. But then one day we got our invitation that was only part A and C. And I was like, what's that mean? It means you're not invited to part B. You didn't make the cut. And it's a little shocking at first. Like, wait, they didn't tick. Do you think that's a mistake? Should we call them? They didn't tick that middle box. Not a mistake. You're not invited to that bit. Too expensive. And then you finally get to the point where you're just invited to the service. Oh, come to the service. What about B and C? No, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. I can see where I fit on the scale. Thank you. I think I'll take my present back. You know, and all of a sudden you realize there's a certain, you know, list of people who make part A, who make part B, who make part C. Here's the great news. There is no part A, B, C, or D with God. You are invited to the whole thing. Everybody's invited. Everybody. Isn't that awesome? Here's an invitation. This is my version of God's invitation. It's a little ridiculous, but I'm going to read it anyway. To everyone who loves the Lord, you're invited to God's great big, gigantic, amazing, blow your mind, way over the top, best week of your life party. Woo! You're invited! When? It's already started, and it's going to be going on for a long time. Buckle up. What's the dress? You can wear a DJ or your PJs. A lounge suit or a swimsuit. Does not matter. Come as you are. Everybody's invited. Doesn't matter what you're wearing. You're invited. Isn't that cool? Isn't that amazing? So this morning I get here a few minutes early and I walk through the town. Have you guys walked through Hartford on a Sunday morning lately? It's heaving. Have you been around? Everything's open. So I'm walking through town, and you guys have probably seen this. About 50 guys in orange, bright orange, on their bikes go blowing past me. Have you seen this? Guys are all dressed in the same now. I'm like, what is that? Be individual, man. No, they're all in their little orange, and they're zipping around, and I'm going, you're invited. They don't know. They don't have their invitation. Then I'm walking by Gallows, and they're setting up their booth because they're going to be serving food today, and they don't know it, but they're invited. And then I go into Costa Coffee, and it is full, by the way. 9:30 this morning, Costa Coffee is full. And there's signs up on the wall that hit me. There's two signs. One is there's a beer and food festival going on today. Did you guys know that? At the Hartford Castle, and everybody's invited. Do you think there'll be a few people there today? It will be heaving. And then the brewery was open. I was walking by, and it was like, the brewery's open. And there was already 50 people going in there at 9:30. Because somebody invited them. Because they got their invitation. So you're sitting here this morning, and a lot of us have already RSVP'd, right? We got our invitation, and we're in. We love the Lord. We're coming to the party. We're in the party as we're speaking, right? But man alive, if you're sitting here today and you don't realize that you have been invited, you, all A, B, C, and D, all parts, you're invited. You know, Jesus talked about in Luke 14 and Matthew 22, he gave these pictures of a wedding feast or a banquet. Have you guys read these parables? And here's the picture he's trying to present. You come to this, it's going to be amazing. It's like a wedding feast. It's like a banquet. And when you go to one of those, what's at a wedding feast? There's food, good food. There's your families there. Your friends are there. There's music. There's dancing. It's a celebration. Right? That's the picture that God wants us to give to the world. When you come to know Him, it is a party. And it's happening right now. And everybody's invited. Everybody. I love that. So I got an idea this morning. I get ideas all the time. What if we had some invitations and we just walked around Hartford and we invited everybody to our party? What if we did that? Wouldn't that be cool? Just meet here at 9:30 on a Sunday morning, walk around Hartford, and you're invited. Come on. There's going to be food. We're going to do some dancing. There's going to be some Americans going to be yelling from up front. Come on. Whatever it is. And then I thought about what Helen's doing. Helen's organizing this thing just next month on the 25th during the Christmas gala, right? Where we're going to have a donkey and we're going to take pictures and there's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. What if we went down and helped her? And that night we just walked around with invitations. We said, you are invited. We're going to do something cool. And in December, we're going to have our Christmas carol thing, and it's going to be filled. Wouldn't it be great if it was filled not just with church people, but with our friends who don't know Jesus? Because they're invited. I mean, let's do it. Let's invite everybody we know to our party, to God's party. Because no eye has seen, and no ear has heard, and no human heart can even imagine how good of a party God's going to throw. He's throwing right now, actually. Right now. The party's on. And that, my friends, is the hidden and secret wisdom that Paul was talking about from ages past that has now been revealed through Jesus, through the cross, to the whole world. And guess what we get to do? We get to take invitations around to all of our friends, and we get to invite them. Because they're included. Come on. Let's do this. Yesterday, I was watching my son play football. I was very animated. It was way bigger deal to me than my 7-year-old who was just out there having fun. I'm like, come on! We now have a person on the sideline, a parent, with a little vest to make sure that we don't get too out of hand. Have you seen that? That's what we need now. He's just standing there like, huh? I'm watching you, Michael. And I'm pumped up. But here's why I'm really pumped. Because there's a dad named Dan, and there's a dad named Mark. And I'm getting to know these two guys. And they do not know Jesus. And they have no idea that they have been invited to the party. So I am building a relationship with both these guys. They both know I'm a reverend, an ordained minister, so they're already giving me some stick about that, and I love it. And Dan's already told me, I'm not religious. I was like, that's fine, I'm not either. He's like, okay, I don't know what to do with you now. I had you in a box, you just busted out of it. I'm like, exactly. We bust out of boxes around here, bud. But man, let me tell you what, my prayer, my goal is that for Dan and his whole family, and for Mark and his whole family, to accept my invitation to come hear more about Jesus. I'm praying for that. So here's my challenge to all of us today. As I said at the church meeting the other night, I got one talk. I give it in a little bit variations. This is my one talk. Who do you want to give an invitation to? Who do you got that you want to invite to the party? We got Christmas coming up. There's all kinds of stuff to invite people to. Easy. Who are you going to invite? I want you to be thinking about it right now, praying about it right now. Who would you love, that you would love to see come along and hear about Jesus? Write out an invitation. Start praying for them and invite them. Here's what I've learned. As scary as it is, crazy enough, statistics back me up, 80%, ready for this? 80% of people, if you invite them to church, will say yes. 80%. You know why people aren't here? Because we haven't invited them. They're just waiting for somebody to say, would you come with me to this? Let's do it. Let's do it. All right, I'm going to rest now. I love this. I love our church. I love this church. I know. I have been here for 16 years. I know you have a heart for this. I know you do. And I know right now a lot of you are sitting there thinking, who can I invite? Who am I going to bring along? I'm pumped about that. Let's do it. Let's encourage each other. And let's keep inviting. And if you're sitting here today and you're thinking, am I invited? The answer is yes. You're invited. Come to the party. Let's pray. Thanks, God, for today. Thank you that we are invited. Thank you for the secret wisdom that has now been revealed. Nobody's left out. Everybody's invited along. You're throwing a party that no one can even imagine how amazing it's going to be. Help us to keep going, Lord, to invite, to invest, to love, to pray, to think about who else can come to know you. We love you, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen.